Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. You are live on the Tex and Rex Show. Irreverent, relevant, and radioactive conservatism with a bite. I'm Rex, broadcasting to you from an undisclosed location in Virginia with drones flying over my head and someone trying to hunt me down and take out the technology to bring you the show. But we won't back down.
And this is Sex. I'm broadcasting from high above Houston in the Crystal Cathedral once again. Unfortunately, no one's trying to take me out. But Rex seems to be having problems. Rex, I don't think you're important enough to kill. I don't know.
I don't think they're trying to kill me. I think they're just trying to shut down the show.
Oh, okay. All right, well. There you go. Yeah, you just have a big mouth, so they're just trying to shut you up.
Well, we definitely have a big mouth. And speaking of big mouths, there was a big announcement today. Did you hear about it?
Yes, I think I did hear something about that.
It was in Norfolk, Virginia. It's very interesting. It's what? We're
didn't
2 weeks
Cub
out.
Didn't the Cub Scouts just join up with the Romney campaign or something?
Yeah, I seriously thought that would happen. But yeah, isn't it interesting that here we are 2 weeks before the convention and we are hearing of a non-nominee telling us who he's going to pick as his vice president?
Well, I thought that was interesting. I would have been surprised and or shocked had I not known that it reeked of absolute desperation of a presumptuous nominee that basically is getting to be like watching a spider drown in a glass of water. You know, you're like, well, in a way, I kind of root for you, but, you know, you just shake that glass and boom, it's gone.
Yeah, it's a fair analogy. Now, there's a lot of interesting things, and we'll get into it and kind of address this from the perspective of a marketing ploy, essentially, to convince everybody that this is happening when, in fact, every day the evidence is mounting greatly that this is falling apart on Romney. It's ridiculous. But anyway, if anybody has any questions or comments regarding specifically the RNC brokered convention or today's news from the failing Romney campaign, the guest call-in number is 646-649-1013. We welcome friendlies, and if you happen to disagree with us, we love opposition. Please call in. We won't bite. All right, maybe we'll bite, but not too hard.
I'll bite, so that's an extra fee. I charge extra for that.
You charge extra for that. So the interesting thing is that this announcement happened in Virginia. Now, I think that Congressman Paul Ryan from Wisconsin, has sort of been on the short list of Romney's VPs for a long time. And it was kind of pathetic, actually, when Romney was trying to win Wisconsin, and he and little Paulie Ryan, I guess he's like mini-me, were wearing the same shirts and the same pants and brushed their hair the same way and running around Wisconsin together. It was kind of cute.
Were they chewing together? Were they chewing bubble gum in sync?
Yeah, they were skipping along in Wisconsin. Although the trees in Wisconsin are not exactly the right height as they are in Michigan, though. That's the only
Yeah,
problem.
Romney knew he was lost. He's like, what's going on with the trees in this location? That's why Paul Ryan was holding his hand. It's like, it's okay.
It's okay. Well, the interesting thing, though, is there was another person who was kind of on that short list and has been actually a very big proponent of the presumptuous nominee in a very important state. That's right here in the Commonwealth of Virginia, and that guy is Governor Bob McDonnell. They've been talking about him as potentially being a veep, and he's been out shilling for Romney in a big way. He's actually one of Romney's 13 at-large delegates from the Commonwealth of Virginia. Imagine that. And I think it's interesting that he chose to make this announcement in Norfolk and then drove up here to Northern Virginia to bolster his numbers, because apparently this is a pretty big deal given the fact that Obama won Virginia, which by a pretty large margin in 08, and then in 09, Bob McDonnell, running on a fairly conservative platform, basically won a lot of those areas also. So it was kind of a repudiation of Romney's first year. I mean, Obama's first year. I confuse those two. Do you do that too, Tex? confuse Romney and Obama?
All the time, man. You remember when people used to confuse Obama and Osama? Remember that was a problem?
Yeah.
It's like this Romney-Obama thing is far worse. It's real.
It is. I mean, it's pretty sad. And the media and the you know, chattering class has just been a Twitter about this, and Twitter's been pretty live with it too, which I think is fascinating. To me, the idea of Twitter being involved in this campaign is fascinating because it really wasn't a player in 08. This is the first time that the Twitter's coming into play. And, you know, the Romney campaign's hiring people to professionally tweet, which is kind of pathetic. I mean, it's 140 characters. What kind of education level do you need to write a tweet?
It's like, useful.
You know, but it's fascinating to me that it was announced in Virginia, which, I don't know, I mean, I guess he probably announced it to McDonald beforehand, but that's kind of a, you know, pretty clear FU, I picked this guy. The fascinating thing to me is nobody knows much about Congressman Paul Ryan. And
no.
Yet he's being touted as this, you know, super conservative guy. I'll tell you, I mean, you know, I'll be honest, there's a lot of congressmen, and if they don't happen to be on a particular bill that I'm interested in or in my locality, I just don't pay that much attention. And this guy's from Wisconsin.
Are you still hanging out with Bill?
Yeah, the bill, he's sitting on Capitol Hill.
Yeah, okay, good, all right.
Yeah, so the fascinating thing to me is, like, you know, I followed Congressman Ron Paul because he's the only Austrian in Congress, but I never really paid attention to a junior congressman from Wisconsin because I don't live in Wisconsin. But during the healthcare debacle when they were proposing the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act, a.k.a. Obamacare, a.k.a. Romneycare, he was a big proponent of coming out and speaking about conservative alternatives. Now, I'll give him credit for being well-spoken and for having the guts to take a stance on issues that nobody wants to touch but are at the core of the problem that we have here. And those are the so-called entitlements. You know, he talks about Social Security, he talks about Medicare, he talks about Medicaid. Most people think that's political suicide, and they're afraid of it. And I think that that's pretty bold, and I'm glad he was doing that. But other than that kind of nod towards the Tea Party regarding in the healthcare, his record is not all that conservative. And I think it's interesting that Romney picks him because the perception is he's conservative, which is sort of kind of an admission on Romney's part that he's not.
Yeah.
That he needs a, quote, real hardcore conservative vice president because Romney is not a conservative and he's not attracting the Republican base, which I think it's a fascinating story.
He literally is the elephant in the room. He's pretending to be an elephant.
Yeah. He's the rhino in the room.
Yeah.
Exactly. That no one wants to talk about. He's a big pink rhino in the room.
Yep.
So, you know, Tex, are you aware that, remember back when really what started the Tea Party happened, in the end of W. Bush's term, you know, we had the, quote, financial meltdown that apparently nobody saw coming except anybody who understands economics, and I think the only guy in Washington thought coming was Ron Paul. What's that?
Yeah. I said, that nobody saw coming except, like, everybody.
Yeah, except for, you know, Alan Greenspan and Ben Bernanke and,
yeah,
you know, those guys. And they had the TARP program, the Troubled Asset Relief Program, which was one of the things that the Tea Party just completely rose up against. Well, it was interesting because I recently, and you can find this on YouTube, went and found Representative Paul Ryan giving an impassioned speech about why Republicans should vote for TARP.
Wait, now you said Paul Ryan. Now, who's that again?
Yeah, Paul Ryan is the junior congressman from Wisconsin, who's apparently, in the fashion of typical rhino moves, is failing upwards to the vice presidency.
Oh, okay, excellent. Well, you know, John Boehner, he's got to be pretty happy about that because he's like, oh, great, one of these Tea Party dudes, I could get rid of him. I could get him in the most useless job in Washington. It's like,
well, that's a great point. That's absolutely.
You know, we got to get those Tea Partiers out of Washington. They're like trying to balance the budget and crap. You know, get rid of them. They're dangerous. Actually, I think Eleanor Holmes Nuthead said that they're demons.
Yeah, the Tea Party people are definitely demons. We are certainly demons. And I would suspect that that's also true of the Campaign for Liberty. They're probably just as demonic as we are. Fantastic. We're in good company. But, yeah, no, you're right. Like, no, so here's the – and I don't want to disparage Paul Ryan too much. I just want to bring up some of the narrative that isn't being told now because, obviously, he's become the presumptive vice president. You know, I think he's a good guy. I think he means well. I'm somewhat sympathetic to some of his views, but let's face it, why him? You know, I mean, you know, he was for the TARP, which is kind of unusual for a Republican who fancies himself, you know, in the Ayn Rand mold of, you know, extreme capitalism. He has been talking about issues that are possibly causing some discomfort for the tan one from Ohio.
Oh, yeah.
I think your point is very valid because, you know, let's face it, the one thing John Boehner doesn't want is somebody who's actually working because then he might actually have to work.
Absolutely. Well, when John Boehner sees someone working while he's trying to get a tan, you know what he does? Starts crying. That upsets him. Don't upset John Boehner. Don't make him cry.
Well, you know, the question I have, though, is when John Boehner cries, how does he keep that orange stuff on his face from running?
Because that's rub on, man. You got to talk to, you know, who's that guy? George, you know, there's Edgar Winter and George.
George Hamilton. George Hamilton?
Hamilton, yeah. George Hamilton, he's watching the TV, he's looking at John Boehner's tan, and he's just, you know, shaking his fist. Like, what's this guy trying to do? They're having a tan off.
A tan off. That's fantastic stuff there. That's the important thing, people, that John Boehner's tan and that he cries. The fact that he's an impotent Speaker of the House, that's a minor point. Now, in that speech, and then just to go back, and again, I'm not beating up on Paul Ryan because I think he's probably a good guy. I think that he probably had a very promising career and would have likely, as he gained stature and position, would have likely become more conservative and done more conservative things. He certainly didn't seem to be one of those weasels who was shying away from controversy. But would you agree with me that basically if this guy was everything everybody touted him to be, this true conservative Tea Party guy, young guy, 42, big future in the party, did he just kill his career?
You know, I don't know. I'm just kind of thinking, like, you know, why did you, Romney, I mean, maybe it's like a deliberate strategy. Maybe they're like, we'll associate this guy with this failed Romney nomination, and then, like, forever his future will be under a cloud, and that'll prevent, you know, this actual, you know, conservative, because I assume Paul Ryan really is a well-meaning conservative, you know. He just hasn't had a chance to do much, which is why I find his nomination rather dubious. But maybe they thought, well, we'll associate him with this, you know, spectacular failure of this Romney campaign. But, you know, I think to a certain extent it speaks to the naivete of Paul Ryan and or, you know, his degree of party loyalty, perhaps over ideological purity, that he would choose to hitch his wagon to this thing. Now, you know, there's always the case that if the presumptuous nominee calls you and ask you to serve, you kind of have to say yes, except unless, and of course, if you say no, which other people have already said no.
Right.
Like Petraeus, you know, that guy, I heard he went in the room, Romney's like, hey, man, how'd you like to be my vice president? And the dude stood up and said, hell no, and he slammed the door as he went out. Like, no way, you're not going anywhere, knucklehead. Find some other idiot.
I think, look, the fascinating thing to me is, in a sense, this may be one of the only smart things that the Romney campaign has done correctly. And let me tell you why. And just so that you know, we've got two great men on the line. Their mics are live, and gentlemen, please chime in as soon as I wrap up my little tirade here. But we've got Robert Jetter of Bard's Logic Political Talk, broadcasting
hey,
on
Robert.
Blog Talk Radio. 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. Sunday through Thursday, And we have the great Sam Samford broadcasting nightly from 10 p.m. on, taking news to a brokered convention. Hey, Sammy. Hey, Robert. How are you guys?
Hey, gentlemen. How y'all doing?
Hey, Sammy. Well, how's it going?
I mean, I am going to disagree with you a little bit. Ryan supported TARP.
Yeah, he did.
And Ryan is a rhino. And the one thing where the Democrats are going to kill Romney for appointing Ryan, you remember the commercial where he was taking the old lady and running in a wheelchair over a cliff?
Yep.
Yeah.
And they're going to use that against Romney.
Oh, sure.
In a big way.
Sammy, agreed 100%. And I'm with you 100%. Like I just said, I just literally, before the show, was watching the YouTube clip of Ryan's speech in support of TARP. And it was an impassioned speech about it. It can be summed up in a couple of words that were said by the former President W. Bush. Basically, Ryan was saying, we have to abandon the free market to save the free market.
That's
like the founding fathers telling you, hey, look, we're going to fight a war against the king and basically our country, but we're going to have to do it as dictators because we have to abandon liberty to save liberty. I mean, come on. It doesn't make any sense. But here's why I think I think that the selection of Paul Ryan might be one of the few, maybe even the only, smart things that the failing Romney campaign has done. Here's why.
Well, even a broken watch is right twice a day, right?
Exactly. It's noon or midnight somewhere. The simple fact is that Paul Ryan is perceived, and Sam, you're absolutely right about the TARP thing and that he might have some rhino tendencies, but he is perceived to be a fiscal conservative, okay? And I suspect
he actually is and has proven it. I'll just add that.
Well, he hasn't, and that's what I'm saying. In other words, I don't think that he proposed a budget, but we haven't seen anything with it. And don't give me this, oh,
they haven't passed
the
budget in 4 years.
Right. So the Republicans point to Harry Reid and say, well, it's his fault. Well, you know what? The Speaker Gingrich got it done, so, you know, sack up, guys, and get it done. But here's the simple thing. The perception, and that's why I say it's a smart thing, because campaigns are really a lot about perception. I mean, think about it. Why are we talking about a broker convention, which is a fact? Because the perception is it doesn't exist. So it's about perception. The perception is that Paul Ryan is a fiscal conservative, okay, and that he's liked by the Tea Party, especially during the healthcare rally. He was liked by the Tea Party. So
that's true because the media said it's true, so it must be true,
exactly.
Right?
So putting him there is kind of a way of saying, hey, we got a conservative on the ticket, but you might as well be admitting that, well, the other guy isn't, you know.
Yeah.
But
that's
I think
what
it's
Limbaugh was saying the other day. He was like, oh, Romney, now he's got a real conservative. He needs to surround himself with real conservatives. That's literally word for word what Limbaugh said. He needs to surround himself with real conservatives so that they can help him. Yeah, I don't know if Limbaugh did the mental gymnastics there. Maybe he was trolling his listeners, but what he's saying is Romney is not a real conservative. No worries.
Exactly.
We knew that already.
Exactly. So with the Paul Ryan nomination, what you've got is the perception of a fiscal conservative on the ticket, but this is a guy who's got perception and promise, and like I said, I think he's genuinely a good guy, and he would have probably gone on to do good things if he stayed in Congress and built up some positions of power and was able to actually get some of these changes done on entitlements and stuff. I'm not saying I agree with his plans, but I'm saying that he was at least bold enough to talk about the things nobody else wanted to, okay? Now it seems that so he's got this perception because he talked about these things, but he hasn't actually done anything, which plays very well for Romney because Romney's a liberal Democrat running as a Republican, so he can't put somebody on the bottom of the ticket who's really conservative and has a record of conservatism because that'll overshadow Romney and highlight how liberal he is. So from a campaign perspective, this was actually a smart decision for Romney. I think it was a stupid decision for Paul Ryan. I think he might have just killed his career.
Oh, great.
Yeah, I mean,
oh, exactly,
I think it was a dumb move on his part. Go ahead, Robert.
Well, I was going to say exactly because if they get the nomination, you know, if Romney gets the nomination, you know, they will lose, and when they do, then that would be, I believe that would be the end. That'd be the end of his career.
He's
and I think they're
failing if they lose, which they will, because that's what Romney does. He loses those elections. He's good at it.
Well,
Right, for one. And then I found something, well, I'll get to that point later. Is that one is, Sammy mentioned TARP, so, you know, you kind of stole my thunder on that one, but that's okay. But, and you guys mentioned TARP as well. But I think actually that ad that was attacking him is actually what got him his name to fame. You know, that's what he got him first recognized as, oh my gosh, look at this poor guy. He's getting, you know, look how they're treating him in the media and look at these terrible ads.
I
think that's what actually got him to fame.
Point of clarification on that, I thought that was Rand Paul, not Paul Ryan. Now, a lot of people seem to confuse Rand Paul and Paul Ryan. So
I don't see how
Rand
that's possible.
Rand Paul, they said, went over the cliff. I thought
That was Paul Ryan.
They did it with
Paul
Ryan because he was talking,
okay,
he was talking about actually reforming Medicare. But I don't know who would confuse Paul Ryan and Rand Paul. I mean, I think that Paul Ryan was the right Paul for Romney to choose, but I think he's the wrong Paul for the country.
the wrong Paul.
Yeah.
Well,
wrong
actually, I think Romney shot himself. I think Romney shot himself in the foot. I really do. I don't think Romney. I mean, I understand with the reasonings that you guys are saying that he was a smart pick. And in some way, and they're valid. But I would say on the other side of playing devil's advocate here is I think it was a bad pick for him because it's just going to even more motivate. By him picking Ryan Paul. Yeah. Since he picked, Paul Ryan, there we go. Gosh darn. With him picking Paul Ryan, okay, I think it was a bad decision because now the Newt supporters and the Romney supporters are even going to be more motivated to get out there and fight for a brokered convention, which they should. But for the people who are behind that, you know, who are behind those efforts, I think it should better motivate them. And I think he shot himself in the foot because if a brokered convention does not happen and he does get the nominee, there are very many Republicans, including myself, if there is not a Newt Gingrich on that ticket, I will not vote for the Republican candidate. I will write Newt Gingrich's name in. And there's plenty others who are going to do that. And on the flip side, for the Ron Paul supporters, I think they will do the same.
Yep.
Yeah.
Robert, you hit the nail on the head, and that's the reason why we need the open convention, because the base of Republican voters, whether it's conservative base that we've been the base, or the new Campaign for Liberty, which is the new and uprising base, are not going to vote for this ticket. And you said that unless there's a Gingrich on the ticket, well, I think the reason that I highlighted, and I'm not disputing what you said about him being a bad choice. I was just only talking about him from a campaign perspective. Of a Gingrich being on the ticket is, first of all, I don't think as much of a patriot as Newt is, he's not going to accept the bottom of the ticket for Mitt Romney.
Romney would never even ask it.
Right.
Let's be honest about this. To the extent that there is some level of genius to it, the genius is this. It gives him some, quote, faux conservative creds to Romney, who's not a conservative, while keeping an actual real conservative who would, you know, hold him to account in Washington off the ticket, right? Because Paul Ryan is still new to the party, so he doesn't have, he's kind of, you know, he's a little bit better off than Santorum is, but as I said, Santorum is a political bottom feeder after he lost that, you know, Pennsylvania election for Senate by whatever it was, 18 points. Well, you don't come back from that in a swing state. You know, it's like, okay, dude, you're done, right? But he managed to come back not because he was so great, but because the party pumped him up because they wanted to stop Newt. You know, so Paul Ryan's kind of in the same boat. If they offer him something, he's so far down the totem pole because he's so new, he's got to take it. I think that's what happened.
Well, I mean, you're going to probably say I'm crazy, but I believe the fix is in to reelect Barack Obama by putting
Absolutely.
You're not crazy.
They're going to take a dive for Obama. That's the whole deal. Just
and
like
if you're crazy,
just like
you're
Romney
crazy
took
like
a dive for Ted Kennedy in '94. That's what Romney does. He's there. He's the fall guy. Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, Texas, 100%.
Yeah. I believe Romney is trying to make his ticket unelectable, So Barack Obama will get reelected. I mean, the polls are not showing very well for Mitt Romney.
Oh, yeah.
Obama should be completely, with the state of the economy, what he said, you know, to the Russian president about, hey, once I get reelected, you know, I'll have more flexibility and more work with you guys when it comes to arms treaties, or disarmament is more like it.
You know, I used to work on Russia policy, okay, so I negotiated with Russians. We never did that. When I was negotiating, we never like, hey, by the way, you know, cut me some slack on this one because I'll get reelected and I could totally give you guys a break. We were never doing that. I don't remember that coming up on the menu back in the day.
It's not on the menu, Tex. That's not an American stance. That's like negotiating with terrorists. I mean, it's insane.
Exactly.
But Sammy, I agree with you, Sammy. If you're crazy like a fox, because I think you spotted what Romney's trying to do, and that's throw the election. But however, I do think that this pick was designed to create some palpability in order to get Romney to the election he wants to win, which is the one in Tampa.
Yeah.
He's losing so terribly. I mean, this announcement was done this weekend because they're desperate. Norfolk wasn't even aware that this was what was going on. This was just supposed to be a regular campaign stop. But Robert, you said he shot himself in the foot. Well, I mean, I have to disagree with you. I don't think he can shoot himself in the foot. He doesn't have a third foot. He's already shot himself in both feet. So what's left to shoot?
What is the guy? Is he like a centipede or something? How many feet does this dude got?
And then he shot himself in the head.
He's playing Deer Hunter, the home version or something.
Just look at the people he's looking at having speak, you know, that they're talking about getting the invites to speak at the convention. I mean, really. I mean, Chris Christie, who else do they talk about? Did I hear somebody mention Ann Coulter?
Jeb Ann Bush, and he's speaking?
Yeah, Jeb Bush, Nikki Haley.
That dude did a lot for the party. That
Nikki
Jeb
Haley?
Bush. Oh,
yeah.
God, he's incredible. Not that Newt Gingrich, though. That Newt Gingrich, he hardly did anything at all.
Yeah.
It's like a rhino love fest. It's going to be like a rhino love fest.
Well, here's the point. This is supposed to be a show to get the unaware Republicans and, quote, conservatives excited about defeating Barack Obama, okay? And it's supposed to cover over the Campaign for Liberty and those of us that are still real Tea Party and real conservatives who don't want to run another rhino because we know we're going to lose. This is designed to cover over all that so that everybody thinks everything is normal, you know? It's a snafu, situation normal, all fouled up.
Yeah,
so it's designed to cover this.
Well, it got me really excited about, overcoming Rince Pupus, you know, not so much Obama. Like, hey, I'm in a foxhole here, and some dude just pulled his grenade and threw it at me. What's going on? What are you doing in this foxhole? Get the hell out. I can't have you. I got incoming fire coming in, and I got you screwing around. Get out of here, Romney.
But you know, if I was Mitt Romney, and I was going to pick a VP candidate, and it wasn't Newt, I would pick somebody like Mike Spence from Indiana. And how where are y'all up to his standards?
Well, I mean, you know, I think he's got some merits. But here's the thing, Sammy. Here's the thing about this pick. Number one, you don't get to pick the VP because you're not the nominee, Mitt.
Yeah.
Two, when you have an open convention, you still don't get to pick the VP. The delegates do.
Right.
See, the thing is, usually it's been so clear-cut who the nominee is going to be because everybody's been falling in line that they pick him like a week or so in advance, right?
Right.
Well, it's pretty clear that everyone hates Romney, right? That's going to be the new TV show that follows Everyone Loves Raymond. It's pretty clear that everyone hates Romney until he doesn't have it. So he had to move it up by a week to try to get some momentum so that people say, oh, yeah. Well, Romney Ryan, I would like, you know, and everyone's like, oh, yeah, you still stink, man, because no matter who you put at the bottom of that ticket, even if it is General Petraeus or whatever, and Petraeus is like, no way, I already said no politics, no way, right? You still have that big floater at the top of the ticket, man, What are you going to do about that? I don't care who's on the bottom of that thing. What are you going to do about that big stinky floater up there?
Yeah, it's a Tex, great point, and here's the way to look at it. Actually, I tweeted this out earlier. Remember back in the day when we were doing the 2008 campaign and there was all this talk about pigs and lipstick and all that stuff? Remember that?
Yeah, I remember that.
Well, guess what? You can put lipstick, conservative lipstick, on a rhino. It's still a rhino. So it doesn't matter. He's still a rhino. That's the fundamental problem. Now, as far as Paul Ryan ending his career, I think that his career was a little different because he was an up-and-coming legislative guy who was going to take action. And under the right tutelage, i.e. President Newt Gingrich, I think Paul Ryan could have gone on to some pretty incredible and great things. But that would have been a problem for John Boehner, so this was a great way to neutralize him. But I don't think that Paul Ryan is going to be able to pull off a Sarah Palin. Sarah Palin is like Obi-Wan Kenobi. They stuck her under McCain. People liked her and, by extension, McCain for about a week and a half, and then came the media onslaught with Tina Fey and all that, a spectacular loss because John McCain was a rhino. But then Sarah Palin, like Obi-Wan, she became more powerful than they could ever imagine.
Yeah.
I don't know that Ryan can do that.
No, he cannot. And I had something interesting happen today, is I had the Republican Presidential Committee call. And
you? Are you going to be the new vice president?
No, but it was about an ad. They called me about an ad. They said, oh, well, you know, since you're a conservative, we want to get you what your take is on this ad that we want to put out. I said, okay. I said, I'll listen to it. And so I listened to it, and it was bashing Obama. You know, I mean, it was all of it was true. Not one mention of Mitt Romney. Not one. None whatsoever.
Yeah.
It was completely just bashing. And so they came back on afterwards, and I said, so, what do you think about the ad? And I said, I really like that ad. And, you know, I said, you know, about Obama, I said, you know what I like the most about it? I said, it didn't mention Mitt Romney, not once. And she was kind of taken aback.
Well,
you know, and I kind of gave
her
the spiel, you know, about what's going on. And, you know, she's listened for a while. And what did she say that I hear from everyone I've even talked to that called me on the phone to talk about whatever? Oh, well, Romney wasn't Romney wasn't my first pick either. Well, who the hell was his first pick? You know, I hear that all the time. He wasn't my first pick. But what the hell? How did he get to where, excuse my French, but you know, I'm just, you know.
This is the Tex and Rex show, Robert.
This is the Tex and Rex show, dude. You can let fly with holy hell or whatever the heck you want on this thing.
You can
whatever the F you want. I'm just not that fired up yet.
Yeah.
Well,
let me interject.
Go ahead, Sam.
Let me say this, and then you can finish up. About an hour after I got off the call with you, me and you spoke for a good while this evening on the telephone, and I was sitting back in my bedroom watching TV, and we got an unknown named number come up on the screen. They left a message. It was the same call that you had.
Okay.
I thought you were getting a call from the Silver Tuna.
And well,
by the way, you know
tuna.
What I'm having for dinner tonight? I'm grilling up some tuna. That stuff's delicious. You know, these tunas nowadays, they call you and they offer themselves to you. They're like, hey, I'm a tuna. You want to eat me? I'm like, oh, yeah, eat you alive, man.
Yeah, we'll put you in a tin. We'll put them in a tin can and pack them up for a later date.
Yeah.
All right, gentlemen, I've got a caller from 562. Let's
562.
I'm not familiar. Caller from 562, you are on. Tell us who you are and what's on your mind.
I am Kevin, and I am a conservative Newt supporter.
Hey,
welcome, Kevin.
Hey,
Kevin.
Like Kevin. I know. I heard Sammy's voice. So, hey, how you going, Sammy?
We're hanging in there, my friend.
Yeah. Well, apparently I am too. Seems like only five or six of us are.
Oh no, there's millions, Kevin. There's millions. It's just that some are not as loud as Sammy and Tex and Rex and Robert, but there's millions of us.
That's true. Yeah, it pisses me off, and I'm watching this TV coverage today, watching this fake conservative acting as if he's a conservative and he's not.
Hey, so, hold on a second, Kevin. Someone's got some scratching going on their line. If you could,
I'm sharpening my knife. I got to cut the tuna, dude.
Excellent. Sharpen away, Tex. Go ahead, Kevin. What's on your mind?
Oh, that's all right. No problem. No problem. I was just saying, you know, it just makes me mad at all. You know, people are always saying, oh yeah, Paul Ryan's a big conservative, and you know, he's the one that's going to help Romney get over the top. It's like Sarah Palin couldn't even do that for John McCain. What makes anybody think Paul Ryan can do it for Mitt Romney?
Well, I agree with you. I don't think that he can, because Mitt Romney is just absolutely useless as a Republican.
Exactly.
But here's a couple of interesting points. Number one, Paul Ryan fancies himself in the Reagan mold, and he might be. Let's be clear about something. When you're a new guy and you get into Congress with big ideas, until you get your sea legs, you're going to get pushed around, and you might have to, you know, accept certain defeats in order to get along and compromise. It's just the way that it is. You know, not everybody is Newt Gingrich, and even Newt Gingrich wasn't Newt Gingrich in 1979. Okay, so
yeah.
I will give him a pass. Not on TARP. I'm still, you know, pretty pissed off about that. But I think that he could have gone somewhere, given the right mentor, and I think Newt Gingrich would have been a good mentor. But he fancies himself an Ayn Rand capitalist. Okay, he read Atlas Shrugged and said, you know, I like this thing.
Ayn Rand had that whole chapter about how occasionally you have to suspend capitalism to save it. You remember that one? That was an Atlas Shrugged.
Yeah, that was Atlas limped. Atlas limped.
Atlas got a broken leg.
Yeah. Atlas got clay feet like Mitt Romney. No, okay, yeah. We can go on with those jokes for a while. But Kevin, seriously, that I believe. Okay, now Ayn Rand was definitely not a libertarian, and some libertarians had a serious problem with her. But it's kind of in the same materialist mold of absolute human freedom. So I think that that's designed to make him appeal to Campaign for Liberty and libertarians. It's not going to work, because the Campaign for Liberty is not that stupid. They're not going to fall for it. The other thing that you have to keep in mind, there's an issue that is uncomfortable to talk about, especially for us Americans who believe in live and let live and go your own way, okay? There's a very big pink rhino in the room, and that's Mitt Romney's Mormon faith, okay? We haven't talked about it. I mean, some of us have, but I'm saying in the media it hasn't been talked about yet. Mitt Romney avoids talking about it. And come September 1st, if we're stupid enough to make him the nominee, it will be a big, big subject.
Is why you can't talk about Jeremiah Wright and black liberation theology, which essentially
is
communism, you know, masquerading as you know, some sort of movement among the underclass, you know, or whatever, you know, they think they're doing, promoting this class consciousness or something. But he can't talk about it because he doesn't want to talk about Mormonism. Well, you know.
Yeah.
Hey, knucklehead, it doesn't matter what you want to talk about. They want to talk about it.
Right.
So, you know, anyway.
Tex, right on. I mean, the fact is that he doesn't want to invite the attack on Mormonism, so he leaves the other issue alone. He's now, and again, this is why, again, I think this is a smart move. I'm not saying it's going to work, but it's a smart move. He's picked somebody who's a perceived, at least. I don't know the guy personally. I can't comment on his personal faith. But perceived as a faithful Catholic Christian. Not quite as hardcore, perhaps, as Ricky Santorum, but perceived that way. So we've got somebody who's allegedly attractive to that all-important Catholic vote. Okay, it's kind of the Santorum who's not Santorum, and we've got this whole Rand aspect. So that's what makes Ryan attractive. But again, it's not going to work because, number one, he really hasn't done the conservative things he's talked about. He has no foreign policy experience, and neither does Mitt Romney. And the fact that he's a Catholic doesn't change the fact that Mitt Romney's a Mormon and that Mitt Romney's not pro-life. So, you know, we're not voting for the bottom of the ticket. That's supposed to be the spare, not the guy who's running the show. So I don't see it giving him the momentum that he needs, other than perhaps to create a smokescreen and cover at this convention.
Well, I'll tell you what, folks. The first reaction I had when I heard about the Paul Ryan pick is also, and you know, this is going to be 2008. Of course, you know, this could be 2008 all over again. Because frankly, if Sarah Palin could not bring, and this is from no fault of her own, but if Sarah Palin could not bring, you know, McCain over the top to win against Barack Obama, Okay, Paul Ryan sure as hell is not going to be able to bring Mitt Romney over the top to beat Obama. This is a weak, you know, that ticket is a weak, in my opinion, this ticket is a weaker ticket than even the McCain-Palin. Palin was, of course, the strong part of that ticket. I mean, but
right.
The McCain campaign was so lackluster, and they wouldn't let her really campaign the way she wanted to.
That's right. Yeah. They kept
but
her going
how
up.
The hell
and then they blamed her for everything.
Yeah, it's just unbelievable. I mean, I can't believe how stupid they must think that we really are.
Well, I was there, dude. Let me give you a real story. This actually happened, right? And, you know, I may have one or two of my actual, you know, real-life friends listening in, and they know I've told them this story, too. When I was at in Washington working for the bureaucracy, we're talking about the Bush tax cuts, right? Well, the Bush tax cuts were saving me something like $40 a month. I didn't make a lot of money back then, but, you know, it's $40 a paycheck, right, which is about $80 a month, so, you know, maybe $85, $90, something like that. But that doesn't seem like a lot, but back then, $40 was real money, you know, and you could go out for a Friday night with your friends on $40, right? So there were times where, you know, given the situation, I'd just come out of graduate school and everything, where I, you know, my friends would call, I just wouldn't pick up the phone because I didn't have any money to go out. Well, you know, you got that $40. Okay, great. Now I could, you know, actually go out tonight and I'll have to avoid the telephone or something. So then I go to work and I'm talking to some dude who's a GS-1510, which means he's making, you know, whatever, $135 back then. You know, they're making something approaching $160, $170 now, if I went and double-checked. You know, and he's like, oh, this Bush tax cut, this is a bunch of bull crap. You know, people don't need that money, you know. We need that money to help, you know, keep our stuff going. I said, well, what are you going to do, John? We'll call him John. What are you going to do, John? Write another report that costs $1 million that nobody's going to read, right? And he said, well, no, but, you know, if we spent that money here, we actually get something for it. They're just going to go buy a bunch of shit at Walmart. That's exactly what he said. So that's what they think of you and the money that you make and your ability to figure out what's in your own interest. Maybe the, quote, shit at Walmart actually happens to be school supplies for your kids, shoes for them, shirts, clothing, or whatever, instead of a stupid report by this knucklehead on some issue that they've been talking about for 50 bazillion years that they can never seem to solve because they have no interest in solving it because there's no profit motive. And they're incentivized to continue the problem going so they can continue to write the same report over and over again so they don't actually have to think about anything. That's what they literally think of you.
Yeah. It's a very good point, Tex. I think that this path to the presumptive 4-day campaign commercial as opposed to an open convention is exactly because that's what they think we are. They think that we are stupid rubes who you know, don't count and don't matter, and we're just going to get in line because apparently we hate Barack Obama so much that, as you said many times, you know, the choice is between syphilis and herpes, and we're somehow going to choose. I choose neither, and I agree with you on that point 100%, Tex. I mean, you know, if someone offers you, you know, hey, I'm going to shoot you in the head or I'm going to cut off your leg, all right, maybe I can survive getting my leg cut off, but I don't want to be shot in the head, but I'd prefer neither, you know? And so...
Yeah.
Stuck
with these stupid choices. How did this happen? What's wrong with me that I let this happen to me? Right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, apparently, what's wrong with you is you buy shit at Walmart.
Exactly. Quit buying shit
at
Walmart, all you
people.
Invest in government. They'll write a report and tell you what to buy. The report will cost $10 billion, but it'll tell you how to shop.
Right.
How much?
Right. Yeah.
$10 billion. It's cheap. Because think about how many people you got to survey for that. It's like 300 million Americans. You can get that report, $10 billion, super cheap, man.
Yeah.
But the main thing that us Newt supporters need to do, we need to put aside our personal differences, and we've got to remain rock solid behind Newt. And, I mean, when one little group or something on social media, they don't like a comment made on a radio show or what have you, oh, well, get over that.
Yeah.
I mean, if there was a bad word used, get over that. Because right now we are fighting for our freedom, and our freedom is Newt Gingrich.
So Sammy, that you say that every night on your show, and we all applaud you for that because you're absolutely right. Look, one of the things about the Republican Party as it's supposed to be, it's supposed to be a pretty big tent for people that don't necessarily agree on everything. But we agree on some things. We agree on the fact that the Constitution is the supreme law of the land. We agree that we want more liberty and less government, not no government, but we want a government that does what it's supposed to do according to the enumerated powers, nothing more, nothing less. And we agree that the other side has, and when I say the other side, I'm talking about the other side and the other party and the other side that's infiltrated our party. The other side wants to increase statism and control and politicize everything. That's what we agree on. Now, the finer points, hey, you know what? It's a democratic process. It's a republic. Let's have those debates. That's why we have a Congress. That's why we have state legislators. Let's do it. So we do have to set these things aside, Sam. You're absolutely right, because the most important thing right now is getting the open convention, which is becoming more and more real every day. I mean, this whole, you know, Ryan thing, it's, you know, the weekend news cycle. Yeah, it's the weekend news cycle. It's just designed to create some kind of buzz, but it's not going to work, and it's going to fade away.
This literally for them is the kitchen sink. They're out of, there's no more tricks in the bag, right?
Right.
You know? So if they don't get the bump on this, it's done, right? And they pulled it too early because maybe you get a bump for these couple days, but you're not going to be riding that wave into the convention. You got Laura Ingraham riding his butt. You got Rush Limbaugh saying, what the heck's going on with this idiot person on his campaign? I don't even know her name, but, you know, who said, well, you know, if they were in Massachusetts, that wouldn't have happened, right?
Andrea Saul.
Yeah, Andrea Saul.
Press secretary.
If you can't trust your press secretary, oh, my God.
Yeah. And as Victoria Scott said on my show, the very first time when Nick called into my show, she said we're in for one hell of a ride for our country if we do not fix stupid. That's not her exact words. But that's what she was meaning. We have to fix stupid.
We got a bunch of people rolling around who are afraid to talk about political things because it's complicated and they don't understand it. And they think they're playing Sharks versus Jets and Pittsburgh Steelers versus the Dallas Cowboys. It's a freaking nation, idiot. I mean, you're supposed to know what you're doing. Okay, we're voting for these people. We're not voting for the jersey. We're voting for the elephant or the donkey. These people actually make decisions that will completely affect the future of our nation and your life itself and how you live it. Start paying attention. It matters.
Mm-hmm.
I agree. You're right, Tex. Tex, you're 100% right. Let me kind of take this in a different direction and then get your comments on it. But I think the most important thing to remember is that the whole point of this conversation, the whole point of this show, the reason Sammy's there, the reason Robert's broadcasting, is we've got 2 weeks, and in these 2 weeks, what's important is to take the information that you learn, the information that we share here, the dialogue we have, the points we bring up, and all your own research on Twitter, Facebook, the Internet, whatever it might be, and do something with it. And that's something that has to be done, is we have to make the delegates aware that there is a huge movement here. And look, we support Newt Gingrich. If you're calling into the Tex and Rex show and you're listening, you're probably a Newt Gingrich supporter. And that's who I firmly believe is the best man for the job at this time. But what I do also want to acknowledge is even possibly more important than that, because this isn't really about Newt Gingrich. He just happens to be the guy right now. This is about not electing to the position of our candidate against a corporatist Keynesian who employs Marxist rhetoric and liberation theology and is basically taking this country down a path of destruction. To defeat that guy, you cannot put up another guy who believes in the same things. And as Robert Jetter says many times, if you change the man but you don't change the ideology, then what have you accomplished? Nothing. So we all have
Absolutely.
To empower these delegates. And the way you empower Amen. These delegates is you write them a letter, you call them, you write on their Facebook page, you write on their web page, you tweet
there
them,
you
let them know. The important thing, and don't think that just because you're not voting in the convention, because none of us, unless we're delegates, are voting until November 6th, that you don't have a say in it. Your delegate is elected to a high office of trust. You
to represent
you. Right. You're his or her constituent. constituency, and they are beholden to you, so you have to let them know, look, I don't know how this is going to go. I've elected you to exercise your judgment at the convention, but in order for you to exercise your judgment at the convention, we have to have an open convention and let the candidates make their case to the delegates so the delegates can pick the right one. This idea that Mitt Romney is the guy is an absolute lie, and we're seeing it exposed daily because this campaign is flailing. It's a terrible campaign. Tex just brought up Andrea Saul. If that's the kind of person and that's the kind of handling that she has of the press and you've appointed her, that tells me that you're possibly not the guy to make decisions of putting people in positions of power.
Who is Mr. Etch-a-Sketch? Who is that guy? Mr.
Fernstrom. Eric Fernstrom.
Another
terrible guy.
You know who else they lost? I don't know if you saw that video that I shared with you today. It was a montage of clips of basically, you know, stalwart Republicans and all the supports breaking out from under Obama as a result of Romney, whatever, Osama, who cares? Anyway, breaking out from under Romney because of this stupid Andrea Saul thing. And even Ann Coulter, you know, Democrat from Republican, Ann Coulter, you know, the Republican harpy, she was like, if this is the campaign, how can we go to the convention and fight for this guy to be the nominee if this is what he's doing? Yeah, Ann, I've been saying that for like 6 months. Where the heck have you been?
The rats are jumping the ship, okay? They're starting to read the tea leaves. They're realizing that we're not going away, that we're getting louder, that when you do something like, you know, this early vice presidential announcement, you piss us off even more and we get even louder. And I think that they're realizing, hey, I've got books to sell, I've got ratings to gain, so I better distance myself a little bit just in case this doesn't actually go the way that we set it up. Because guess what? It's not going the way they set it up, and so they're hedging. But the thing is that if they were true blue conservatives, if they were real patriots, they would have opened their mouths 4 months ago and prevented this from happening in the first place so that we could have had two front runners debating the issues out in the open as it should be for the entire race. And that would have been Drs. Gingrich and Dr. Paul. But that's not what they did. They shut it down and they picked a liberal Democrat.
They thought they were going to get, as you know, Mark Levin says, they thought they were going to get the masterminds behind the scenes. They were going to pull the party together at every level, and they were just going to put the whole thing in the bag for Romney. And then when we stupid Republicans showed up, people, you know, voting for the party, supporting the party our whole lives, showed up and said, "Hey, I don't like that guy. They're just going to tell us to shut the hell up." Well, wait, excuse me? Did you just tell me to shut the hell up? Do you know who you're talking to? I think the whole nation was like, I'm sorry, Rince Cubis, but you don't run this thing. You're just adults that we elected to go to our boring meetings for us. So thanks for doing that, but you're not in charge. Get the hell out.
And notice exactly. From the conference.
Well, gentlemen, I'm going back down now because I got to go get some dinner and get ready for my show at 10 o'clock. And hopefully we will see all three of y'all there on my show at some point.
Definitely, Sammy. We'll be on.
Yep. We'll see you later, Sammy. Thank you for calling in.
But God bless Newt Gingrich and God bless Ron Paul. And we have to be united, not divided. Plain and simple.
Absolutely.
And in case you don't like a certain word that comes out of a certain guest mouth on my show, that is no reason to go against me or Robert or Rex and Tex. I mean, we're Americans. We have free speech. Stand up and speak out for what you believe in. Don't ever shut up. Don't ever back down. God bless y'all. And we'll see you on the flip side.
Sounds good. Bye-bye. Thanks a lot,
sir. That's Sammy Samford from the Sam Samford Blog Talk Radio Show that comes up on Blog Talk Radio right after the end of this show at 10 p.m. Eastern Time. And you'll usually find me and Tex and Robert on there. I think we lost Kevin again, but he's on there frequently too. But the fact
I'm
is on, that
I'm right, I'm right here. I'm right here.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. Okay, Kevin's here. Okay,
I think the government got a hold of my iPhone. They keep cutting my phone off.
Yeah, well, that's what they've been trying to do to us here too, Kevin. They don't want us to speak. They don't want you to think. They want you to do what you're told.
I just find it very funny how I've just been very active today on the internet, and my phone's been all of a sudden like acting up, you know, when it hasn't been the whole time, and all of a sudden today it has been. Like,
what state are you in, Kevin? Which state? Which region? Part of the country? Oh, it's gone dead. Did I get hung up?
Maybe. No, you're on. Maybe we lost Kevin, Kevin again, or maybe he just did not feel comfortable disclosing his location. Although if he's got an iPhone, they've already got your location, Kevin.
exactly. That doesn't matter.
No, with your phone.
It's not like they don't know where you are.
He's back. He's back.
Oh,
I'm telling you, man. They keep getting at me.
I'm telling you. What's your 20, man? Where are you located? Within however many degrees of. Standard deviation.
I'm in Southern California. I'm in Los Angeles County.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, there you are. You're deep in the heart of the communist territory, man.
Hey, but you know what though? Ronald Reagan governed the state. That's all I got on you guys now.
Yeah. I've been out to the Reagan Library over there in Simi Valley.
It's great. It's awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
It's a nice place for. I mean, there are conservatives out here. You'd be surprised.
You know,
more and more of them are moving out.
Yeah.
A lot of you guys are moving here to Texas.
Oh yeah. No doubt about that.
Kevin, why don't you fill me in on this? Because I think a lot of people are surprised. Because everybody, when they hear California, they automatically think Hollywood, Los Angeles. You know, all liberals.
Oh.
But the fact is that
for me, I'm thinking about the Lakers. But anyway, that's enough story.
Yeah, but I mean, the fact is that. You know, obviously, just like in the Northeast or almost anywhere else, even Texas has Austin, you know, there are big blue cities. But if you drive a little outside of the cities, how are people in California generally? I mean, I know your economy sucks, but, you know, what's the sentiment out there with the whole Obama thing? Did we lose you again?
Someone
didn't like that question. They don't want someone to expose that the left coast isn't full
of
left.
Cut the phone.
Hated that question.
Well, Tex, let's take this in a slightly different direction. We're kind of at the top of the hour, so we've got, you know, maybe about an hour left. I was kind of interested in hearing Robert's take on this too, but that's okay. Maybe we'll get him back. Maybe we got Kevin back. But let me throw this to the both of you, and you guys can chime in. Paul Ryan selection as presumptuous vice president. This guy was running around like, you know, mini Mitt in Wisconsin. They were wearing the same blue shirt, the same white shirt, the same plaid checkered shirt. It was pretty lame and pathetic. But here's the question. Wasn't Paul Ryan sitting with Mitt Romney or standing with him when they were giving away subs that cost more than $5
He was. Yeah.
Yeah,
Isn't that potentially a felony in Wisconsin?
Well,
yeah,
giving away subs would not be. It's just that Romney was there being adult, apparently with no legal advice, and he was encouraging people, handing people submarine sandwiches and saying, you know, hey, vote for me, right? Well, that's illegal.
Anything over a dollar is illegal.
Yeah.
So is it smart for him
I don't think a club sandwich is a dollar.
No. Not even in Wisconsin, where
exactly.
They got the cheese, you know. But, guys, don't you think that it just exposes, again, the incompetency? I mean, if this is a potential legal problem that, you know, we haven't been talking about, but frankly, we know that the Obama campaign is going to talk about it, so we should talk about it before we hitch our wagon to this guy. Isn't it kind of problematic that his second choice, the backup, the spare, so to speak, is implicated in the same situation?
I would say so, but then again, you know, maybe that's why he picked him. He's like, look, we're both sinking on the same ship. We might as well just hitch our wagon because we're going down together. It's like, yeah, all right, whatever. Look, I'm not running for office. I will never run for office, okay?
For one thing, I have a tendency to let fly all sorts of profanities that apparently offend about half the country. You know, you dudes up there on the East Coast freaking out when you hear a bad word or whatever. You know, I don't know what your problems are, but, you know, whatever. You know, not like you're not saying, you're just, oh, I can't say it publicly. Yeah, be a man. Just quit trying to be two people, idiot. Just be who you are. But, you know, they're out there, doing this thing. Who cares?
Well, I mean,
what was I saying?
Know,
who cares?
You were talking about the fact that, you know, he kind of picked him because he had the, he was kind of implicated in the same.
So he's implicated in the same freaking things. It's like, look, we better hang together here, you know, with all this kind of stuff because, you know. But look, that's the point. I'm not even running for office, all right? You're not running for office. Robert's not running, and Sammy, none of us are. We already know that that's one of the rules, right? I mean, I think when you're born as an American, you kind of know that one. You can't be buying both. It's just sort of intrinsic. But, like, these dudes didn't know. So that, to me, is like a warning sign. What else doesn't this guy know? Why did he have to burn all his records as governor of Massachusetts, you know? Well, he didn't burn them. They bought the hard drives, and they took them home, and they burned them or whatever, you know? But why did all that happen? Sounds kind of fishy to me. Am I implying something? Yes, I'm implying something. It sounds freaking fishy. It's total, because it's totally fishy. There's no record of his governorship in Massachusetts. Why the hell not?
Well, it's not that there's no record. The records have disappeared.
But
we've got a record, and let's be very clear about this. I've heard this from, you know, the so-called Mitt supporters or the so-called conservatives who have said, well, you know, Mitt wasn't my first choice, but, you know, now we got to unite and get behind him. I've heard this. Well, you know, he was governing in a northeast liberal state, so he had to be more liberal.
Yeah, like it was against his will. Like he's like, well, I totally want to get Newt Gingrich on this state, but, you know, I got to be moderate. That wasn't going on. I mean, people will lie to themselves. They'll tell them all these happy stories so that they don't actually have to look at the world as it really is, so that they can go about their day. Quit lying to yourself, people.
Yeah. I mean, the fact is that Newt Gingrich could have used that excuse, couldn't he? I mean, in 94, right, he stormed in. First of all, they told him that he couldn't get a majority. He storms in with this majority first time in 40 years, and he's got all these changes he wants to do, which, let's face it, the RINOs, especially the Bob Dole Senate, just didn't want to do. So he had internal opposition, although the rhetoric didn't necessarily express it because they couldn't. But then he's got this, you know, intelligent, politically astute, liberal Democrat who is a powerful president, right? And who is it that moved? Did Newt move to the left or did Clinton move to the right?
Yeah. And Clinton's like a political genius. Gingrich got Clinton eaten out of his hand. And Clinton still claims credit for all that crap. He's like, oh, yeah, I did all that. That was me. That was wonderful. I was getting blowjobs and everything. Blowjobs are awesome. You know, I mean, that's what was going on. That was all Newt Gingrich. You know, I'm not disrespecting blowjobs.
Let's think of it this way, right? Speaker Gingrich did these things because he was the Speaker of the House, and revenue bills originate in the House. That's how the Constitution demands that it go. And then they got to Bill Clinton's desk, and he signed them. So Bill Clinton does have a right, for whatever reason, to take credit for those things because he was the president that did not veto them, okay?
Yeah.
But let's be clear.
They
by
vetoed
taking credit,
them twice.
Well, yeah, I mean, eventually, you know, when he passed it after they worked it out, and let's be clear, this wasn't like, you know, Gingrich said do this and Clinton said yes. There was serious negotiations. Actually, it's a good point, Tech. One of the accusations we've had against Gingrich and why we want Romney to be the presumptive nominee, because Romney's even keeled, and he's, you know, humdrum and has nice hair, and so everything's kind of copacetic with him. Gingrich is zany and erratic, okay? And actually, Lindsey Graham, who was one of the RINOs that committed mutiny against Speaker Gingrich back in the 90s, recently admitted it on Fox News, of all places, with Greta Van Susteren, who might be the last decent journalist on that Mitt Romney news network. But he basically admitted that they considered Newt erratic because he would change the plan daily. And what he said specifically was he would tell them we're doing A. Then he'd go meet with Clinton and come back and say we're doing B. Well, how did
they expect him to go in there, guns a-blazing, and say, this is what we're doing, and Clinton's got the veto power. Remember something, that the executive and the Congress are co-equal branches. So Newt Gingrich can't just tell Clinton what to do, and Clinton can't tell Gingrich what to do, but Clinton does have the power that whatever bill Gingrich passed in the House and got through the Senate, he could send it back, which he did. But it was a negotiation, and he said, look, these are the conservative things I won't compromise on, and Clinton said, these are the liberal things I won't compromise on, and they worked on the things that they could. But the real question is, who moved? And when I say moved, not in the compromise of the details, but who moved ideologically? Was it Gingrich that moved towards the Democrats, or was it Clinton that moved towards the Republicans?
Yeah.
And isn't that what we're looking for? Isn't that
exactly
what we want?
And look at this. And by way of comparison, look at this John Boehner. The Tea Party goes out in force. You know, we put John Boehner in there, or actually we put a bunch of Tea Party in there, but that gives John Boehner the majority. He gets elected Speaker, I guess, because he's been around so long. And what's he do? He's done nothing. Absolutely. Has he moved the debate with Barack Obama? Has he done anything? You know, he's like, oh, yeah, well, if I pass something, the Senate's just going to kill it. So I might as well just go ahead and give up now. That's not how you do things. You're the Speaker of the House, for God's sake. It's one of the most powerful positions in the world. You know, I mean, it's probably one of the top three most powerful positions in the world, right? And this guy's like, yeah, but the Senate will just veto it. So, you know, let's just take a nap. Let's get some more, get George Hamilton to do some more rub-on tans on me. You know, what you do is you let them veto it, and then you go out and you have a press conference and you beat them over the freaking head with it every day. And then he's like, oh, yeah, but the mainstream media, they just won't cover it. Well, find the alternative outlet. You know, the original contract with America was published in TV Guide. I mean, back in the day, TV Guide, people actually used to read that thing, or some people did. They had a huge subscriber base.
It's true. Very true. I mean, I think people forget, right, the 94 conservative revolution, that occurred before Al Gore invented the Internet, right?
Yeah, that's actually it was.
Of course,
had not yet invented the internet. He was busy at work on it, though.
Yeah. No, I mean, look, let's bring in some facts here before people start actually thinking that you and I believe that Al Gore invented anything other than global warming. But here's the fact: the internet was a research project of DARPA, okay, which is a defense research agency. It's a government research agency, and was funding university research back in the 60s, and if I'm not mistaken, it was 67, either 65 or 67 when we had the first internet created. I think it was UC Berkeley and UCLA, maybe that was the connection. And I think the idea behind it back then, remember, folks, if we're talking 65, 67, we're talking about the height of the Cold War with the Soviet Union. For you playing at home or under 30, the Soviet Union, the USSR, Union of Soviet Socialist Republics, that's what we used to call, what we call today Russia, which was a communist dictatorship, and we had a Cold War with them. Look it up, because I don't think your textbooks at school talk about it. And so we were worried that somehow the Russians, who had nuclear superiority at the time, were going to knock out
multiple independently targeted reentry vehicles, MIRVs. We did not have MIRVs.
Right, we were kind of behind the eight ball on that one. So we were concerned, the government was concerned, that our military capability and our communications infrastructure was going to be severely debilitated by a Russian attack because everything was wired. So they wanted to build a system by which the information would be rerouted automatically through another venue to get to its destination. And so that's where we kind of built the Internet. So for Campaign for Liberty, Ron Paul guys listening, if it's not an archive, please call in. If it's archived, by all means, call in Friday and Saturdays, 8 to 10. Tex and Rex are here, all friendly show, but we are Gingrich supporters. The call-in number is 646-649-1013. Again, 646-649-1013. So this is an area where conservatives and libertarians tend to disagree. Libertarians don't want any funding for things that the government shouldn't do, and so they might have some issue with this. However, look at what has exploded in the way of communication, social media, and commerce because of the Internet, which originally started out as a government defense project.
Why should the government not do the Internet? It's a defense project. That's in the Constitution.
Exactly. I agree 100%, and I think it was well worth it. We've seen the results. Now, here's the thing. That was the Internet back in the late 60s.
Well,
but it was not the
world another bit we have to dispel first. There's a bunch of you liberal knuckleheads out there that seem to be laboring under the misconception that the Internet was invented at CERN. It was not. It was invented in the United States of America by DARPA because we had the bombs. And we didn't say, hey, let's outsource our bomb problem to the Europeans. They seem to like nuclear weapons. The Europeans hated nuclear bombs. Remember the Minuteman missile crisis, the MX missile, all that kind of stuff? Europe hated it. You think we're outsourcing the Internet problem? Look, the Internet is designed so that a targeting site in Nebraska or wherever the heck it happens to be, even in the middle of the Pacific Ocean in a submarine, if everything else fails and the communication system in the United States is knocked out, the Internet routes around the problem and still gets the message through to launch your missile. That's what the Internet is designed to do. And that's why during 9/11, the phones didn't work, but Internet communications did, because the Internet is a survivable system. It's a non-linear system. Mankind tends to develop a lot of linear systems, and the thing about a linear system is if you cut the line, the whole thing doesn't work. So they had to develop a non-linear system in order so that we could blow up the world. That was the point. Hey, but if they do that, then we can't blow up the world. Like, oh, don't worry, we'll invent the Internet. Now we can blow up the world.
And then when we get Newt's moon colony, we can blow up the moon, too.
Yeah, that's right.
I told you, Texadrex, irreverent and radioactive, but you got to be careful because we're mostly serious. But here's the thing. I think that a good analogy with that for those of you playing at home is remember when you were kids and you used to do, the tin can telephones? You know, you'd taut string. You could actually send the audio by speaking into a can or a cup. Well, once that string is cut, you lose communication. The Internet work will route around that. So, Tex, you're absolutely right. It was invented here. It was DARPA. It is an American project. Now, you brought up CERN, and for those of you that aren't familiar, CERN was where the HTML, Hypertext Transfer Protocol, I believe, that's where that was developed, which is an overlay on the Internet. So when I say that, the 94 conservative revolution was before Al Gore invented the Internet, well, obviously the Internet was invented by Americans back in the 60s. It was in 1995 that we had the World Wide Web, which made the Internet commercially viable. And again, for those of you under 30 at home, back in the day when computers had 128K processing capability, if you were lucky, when Wozniak and Jobs, two kids in California in a garage.
I had a 300-baud modem, dude.
Wow, that's pretty serious, 300-baud. That's big.
Yeah.
They invented the personal computer revolution in a garage in California because of American ingenuity and our free enterprise system. Okay, yeah, exactly, out of wood. And it was built here in America and invented here. So, back then you had, some Usenet groups, some email, things like that. But what we know today is the World Wide Web didn't exist and wasn't really commercially viable until 1995, which means Newt Gingrich was able to bring this majority about with very little alternate methods of communication other than the grassroots and the mainstream media. Okay? So the reason we're discussing this is because he did this back then, and now today the media is considerably more corporatist, considerably more of a propaganda machine, but we've got a weapon, and that weapon is the World Wide Web. Facebook, Twitter, Blog Talk Radio, this is how we can get the information out there and communicate. And if it wasn't for these means of social communication and who I believe will eventually be vindicated and go down as one of the greatest chairs of the Republican Party, Michael Steele, we wouldn't be having this conversation because they would have ramrod Mitt Romney already, and we'd already be looking at him trailing Obama 7-8 points in the polls, and everybody would think that there's no chance.
Now, this is a rule of thumb for you guys playing at home there. Whenever a Republican leaves the party in disgrace and the party is upset with him, that's because he just did something that's totally going to help you out, right?
So they hate this Michael Steele guy because Michael Steele essentially made sure that Romney and the money people couldn't take over the Republican Party this election. So Michael Steele's your best friend right now. You don't know that, but he is.
And I think that people will know that, because what's going to happen in 2 weeks is we are going to have an open convention. We are going to dismantle the Mitt Romney presumptive machine, and we are going to hear the alternate voices. We are going to hear from Speaker Newt Gingrich. We're going to hear from Dr. Ron Paul, and our delegates are going to make a decision to put a ticket together that will defeat Barack Obama in November. Now, why is this going to happen, and why is Rex so overly confident? Well, Rex is overly confident because he's kind of an arrogant prick, but besides that, the simple fact is that the levers of power at your disposal, that entire historical discussion about the Internet and references to Al Gore wasn't just for entertainment purposes. It's a real point. And it hit me. Remember, this is unscripted radio, folks. We don't know what we're doing. It hit me when Tex brought up that the contract with America was published in TV Got, which was the magazine that we used to look at to figure out what was on the 12 channels that we had, as opposed to having to go online.
We needed a whole magazine to figure out what was on 12 channels.
Now we don't need that. Yeah, we don't need a magazine. Now we have 350 channels.
Yeah, that's right. But now we don't even have a magazine. Nobody knows what's going on. It's just crap. Every channel is crap.
Yeah, basically that's the, you know, it's a pseudo-reality TV and pseudo-news, actually infotainment.
Yeah.
But the fact is that the point to bring up is that the levers of power are in your hands. God blessed you with the privilege of being an American. Think about it. This planet has over 7 billion people currently living on it. God knows how many billions have lived on it. And there's 300 million of you. That is an amazing thing. It's not a coincidence. It's not something to take lightly. You live here. You do not live somewhere else. You're an American. You need to be proud of that. But with that pride and that power comes a great responsibility. You are sovereign. And that makes you somewhat responsible for your government, more so than someone who's a subject or in a dictatorship. Because you have the power of the vote, and you have a voice. That First Amendment guarantees your right to free speech, free press, free assembly, and redress of grievances. That's a very serious power to have, and you have to exercise it. And that doesn't mean just show up on primary day and hit a party ticket, okay? It means participate and understand. And right now, what you have to understand is that there are 2 weeks until our delegates convene in Tampa Bay in order to elect the nominee for the Republican Party to go up against Marxist Barack Obama and bumbling Joe Biden, okay? To do that, they have to know what it is that you're looking for. Stop feeding on the idiot box and having it tell you what to think. You have a right. You have the constitutional levers of power at your disposal. You have the Internet. You have Twitter. You have Facebook. You have paper and pen, and the post office still delivers letters, and you can send that to your delegate. Pick up a telephone. Okay, so it's very important that you do these things. Don't think about it, because there's only 2 weeks left. Do it, and do it now. That's the important thing here, because and if you're listening to this, you're probably for Speaker Newt Gingrich, and I applaud you, because I think that the man has the skills, the history, the power, and the heart to do this. And unlike this tepid campaign, so to speak, against Mitt Romney, Newt Gingrich is a fighter, and he will take that fight to Barack Obama and dismantle him. But the important thing about an open convention is let the voices be heard. Let the democratic process work out. And let us nominate the one who should be our candidate. Let us not accept the choice of Goldman Sachs, the corporatist agenda, Rince Cubis, and John Boehner.
Aren't you guys like Goldman Sachs and New York's last choice, Wall Street's last choice? That was Barack Obama. Guy's doing awesome, isn't he? You're going to love this Mitt Romney guy they lined up. You know, I mean, come on. Quit doing what they tell you just because this guy's got a lot of money and a bunch of stupid ads. His ads suck. His campaign's freaking terrible. You know, he's like, oh, I'm a good businessman. Okay, well, a good businessman knows the people around him, and if they suck, he gets rid of them, and he replaces them with a real team of people who know what the hell they're doing, right? This guy doesn't do that. He's got Andrea Saul around him and Eric Knucklehead, Etch-a-Sketch doofus, who will probably never work in politics again. you know, that's not a good businessman. He's like, oh, I'm going to be the national CEO because I can think of all this stuff. Well, you can't even recognize that the people around you suck and you can't get rid of them. So that doesn't tell me that you're going to be the big change agent over there in Washington like you keep coming off as.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you, Tex, because that's what he's running on, right, is his CEO status, because he can't run on his record as governor.
Can't run on anything.
You know, but he's running as a CEO. Now, let's be clear. Did Mitt Romney at Boston Capital and Boston Consulting and Bain Capital, did he make money for his investors? Yes, lots of it. The question is, how did he do that? I'm not saying the man doesn't have skills, and I'm not saying he's unintelligent, because let's be clear, you got to have some skills and some intelligence.
He sucks at politics.
Okay, he does suck at politics, and he sucks at a certain kind of business. That would be the kind of business where you scrape together $50,000 from friends and family because you got this great idea, and you put in 120 hours a week of sweat, and you live eating garbanzo beans and, you know, cutting all the corners and coupons out of the magazine, and you sweat making payroll every 2 weeks for a couple of years, and then you succeed. And then when you succeed, they tax the shit out of you, okay? That's business in America. Mitt Romney,
watch the potty mouth, Rex. That's what Sammy was talking about. It's your bad potty mouth that's bringing us all down.
I know, and I apologize for my potty mouth, but I'm a little passionate, and we've got 2 weeks left, so sometimes I'm likely to fly off the handle. But clearly,
well, fuck you. Keep going. Keep saying what you're saying.
Tex never uses foul language because Texans
have
such clean mouth.
I would never do that,
there.
Dude. That's not in my. You're the defiled.
I'm the bad influence, right?
Yeah, you're the horrible influence on me, man. You're corrupting me. Anyway,
exactly. So the simple fact is that the kind of money that Mitt Romney was making was the kind of money you make by moving things around through coercion. I'm not saying that's all he did, you know. Certainly Staples, you know, that's pretty good, you know. I like Staples. Sports Authority, that's fine. Notice, though, that these are retail distribution
turnaround situations.
Arms. Yeah, turnaround situations, retail distribution arms. These are not true first-level wealth generators, okay? They're distributors. There's certain profits to be made. There's people employed. Products that are distributed, it's fantastic. It's great.
They're retail outlets.
But it's exactly. It's not first level. It's not mining. It's not manufacturing. It's not first level order of goods. And we need that in this country. It's a very important thing. So even if you look at the way he did the Olympics, he said we're going to go after the money. We're even going to go after money from the Department of Education. That way we get the kids there. We get more money. Mitt Romney's Olympics collected more funds from non-security resources from the federal government than any Olympics prior. That's the kind of guy that you want who moves government money around, which is your money because you're on the hook for it, then Mitt Romney's your guy. Notice that Goldman Sachs is backing him. Well, Goldman Sachs and these companies, and let's be clear, I'm not saying that the financial services and investing, that these things are inherently bad. What I'm saying is that the way it's managed is for the benefit of a few using the power of government. And that's called corporatism. It is the antithesis of free market capitalism, which is what we're about, which is what Newt Gingrich is about, which is what Ron Paul is about. And that's the important thing here. If you want to succeed in America, you have to risk failing. And most people fail far more than they succeed. Do you, just text off the top of your head, do you know how many times Thomas Edison had to invent the light bulb before he invented it?
Not off the top of my head. What, like 1,000?
Yeah, I think it was like 1,000 or 2,000 times. So the guy failed thousands of times in order to succeed. Now, if he had succeeded, it'd be kind of hard to broadcast right now because I don't know if the cell phone would interfere with my candlelight or vice versa. So understand that's how things work, okay? You fail more than you succeed. When you're using a corporatist system, you're ensuring your success by using the power of government to funnel money to you as opposed to dealing with
Look,
the competition.
Gingrich had a whole thing on this the other day. I watched it, where he was saying that, you know, back in the 1910s or whatever they called it, the teens or the aughts or whatever the heck it was, if the stagecoach industry had been sufficiently organized, they would have been able to lobby the government to create a Department of Stagecoaches in order to shut down the auto industry, right? That's what corporatists do, because they're the past. They have their success, so they want to stop anyone else from having their success. The true genius of the American situation is there is no guarantee. There shouldn't be a guarantee. We run a very chaotic economic system here with revolutionary change all the freaking time. And what's been going on over the past 50 to 60 years is all of a sudden everybody wants a sure thing and nobody wants any risk. Screw you, you got risk, right? Because the real way it works is if you have no risk, you have no return. And so all those guys, you know, you dudes over there in New York in the banking industry, and now you doctors with this Obamacare who want to defer all your risk onto me and onto the average American citizen, well, screw you, you don't get a nickel because you got no risk. I got all the risk, so I get the big return. Screw you.
Yeah, well, you know, I think that the idea is that, hey, this is America. You can do it. You can succeed. You might fall. You might get hurt. Get back up again and do it again. But when you become dependent on government for providing you these things, and then you use government to ensure that no one can compete with you, whether it's for a handout or for a privilege, then this whole thing is going to go down. It's going to go down fast. And I don't mean to put economics ahead of our cultural problem, but too many in the Republican Party, and this goes out to you, Campaign for Liberty and Ron Paul people, want to separate our moral culture from our economic climate. These are not two separate things. Okay, man was not made to serve the economy. The economy was made to serve man. And so the point is that if you want a free and virtuous society, okay, we're not talking about rampant libertine freedom here. We're talking about a free and virtuous society, a society that adheres to the natural law, whether you believe that that is because of the Judeo-Christian God or you're theist or whatever it is. Be a realist. There is a natural law. You can't rewrite these laws. They exist outside of you. You can legislate gravity away. You're still going to be on this planet, okay? So that's what we're talking about here. If you want an opportunity to have that kind of society and that kind of revitalization of the American spirit, you need to stop Barack Obama from turning us into a socialist banana republic. And I don't mean to point the finger solely at him, because as far as I'm concerned, he's just the current puppet of his sentiment, okay? But
yeah,
he's in a position where if he's reelected, he's going to do some serious damage, people. This is not something to be taken lightly. And what we're talking about for the next 2 weeks is how to defeat Barack Obama, because I guarantee you this, there is no way in hell that Mitt Romney can beat Barack Obama. He will go down in flames. Barack Obama has had such a terrible presidency, unless you happen to be a socialist and want this, but if you're an American, then this is so terrible that it should be very easy to defeat him. Reagan smoked Carter, who wasn't as bad as Obama. He smoked Carter in 1980, and there's no reason why we can't smoke him now, unless you put up a guy who has the same corporatist mentality, who is so limp, so tepid, so pathetic and robotic, so wrong on all the issues, so not willing to take the fight to the opposition, one who wants to be elected because you owe it to him, as opposed to one who wants to stand up and serve because he owes it to you.
Well,
and
you know,
I assure you.
George Bush Jr., this thing about his father, and George Bush Jr. is just doing it for his father and everything. Well, guess what? Mitt Romney's doing it for George Romney, right?
Yeah.
Same thing. Absolutely,
yeah,
the same thing.
It's a legacy thing here, okay? But it's very clear. And for anybody who wants to come at me, come after me, and tell
me, oh,
you got to get behind Mitt Romney, he's the guy. Let's be clear. Mitt Romney is absolutely 100% not the nominee. Mitt Romney doesn't have enough delegates. That's why these people are panicking. That's why there was that announcement with Paul Ryan today, okay? He doesn't have it. Now, that doesn't mean he can't get it, because they're going to try to have credentials battles. They're going to try to displace delegates. They're going to pull every dirty trick that they can. And the only thing stopping them from doing that is you out there listening, whether it's live right now or in the archive. It's your responsibility to let them know that your eyes are on them, to let them know that you will not accept defeat, to
to let them know that you don't want to run the wrong candidate who has not been vetted and who is such a dangerous liability that the onslaught from the propaganda and the media will destroy any chance of success in November. You've got to tell them, and you've got to tell them now. We haven't seen his tax returns. We don't know what's going on with the SEC filings. He won't talk about his faith, okay, which you know, he has a right to his faith, but if he's applying for the job of POTUS, then we have a right to know what forms his judgment, and we don't know how it's going to be played out in the media. Are they going to mock it? Are they going to turn him into a laughingstock, or by extension, all of the rest of us? We don't know where he how come he says he's pro-life and he's collecting money from the manufacturers of abortifacients. So this guy is got 4,000 things in the liability column, and in the reason he's a good candidate column, he's got
he looks like a president.
Hey, he's got great hair. Okay, he's got great hair. So
that's why they voted
clear
for who was it? Not Calvin Coolidge, but the other guy, Warren G. Harding. So the guy looks like a president. Let's vote for him.
Yeah, and to some degree, isn't that why John Kennedy was able to handily defeat Richard Nixon?
Yeah, exactly. He looked good. All his answers, if you go back and you watch that stuff, they're talking about these two islands between China and Taiwan, right, which back then was called Formosa. And I forget the name of the stupid islands now, but that whole debate was about these stupid islands, right? And Kennedy's answers were terrible. The guy's an idiot. And if you like knew anything about it, if you listened, you're like, this John Kennedy guy has no chance. But apparently, you know, you put enough makeup on the fool, right? And, you know, Richard Nixon's over there like, no, I don't need makeup because I'm not like a girl, you know. I'll just go out there, I'll be Richard Nixon or whatever. Well, you hit him with those you know, limelights and that incandescent crap, and guys start sweating. They're like, oh, what's going on? Guy's sweating. Well, that can't be good because most communication is not verbal, right? On radio, it's mostly verbal. Right?
Right.
But a lot of what you're hearing when you see someone is their body language, right? So like, oh, guy's sweating, probably lying.
Mm-hmm.
Just idiots, man. Idiots everywhere.
Well, you bring up a great point, okay? And let's be clear. I mean, one would hope, okay? And if you're listening to this, you're probably actually pretty involved. So, but just generally speaking, one would hope that people would look at things on their merits, would do the research, won't accept the rhetoric, but will actually want to know what the truth is. Dude, what is going on over there? Are you under attack?
No, sorry, I'm cleaning up. I just ate, so I just turned the water on to wash my dish off. Sorry about
Congratulations.
That.
Congratulations. All right. But you know, you would hope that people would really dig in and get the information and understand things, and you know, we would know that, you know, look for the real truth as opposed to the rhetorical language that, you know, so you're severely conservative and all this kind of stuff. But the fact is, for the most part, okay, most people aren't that involved. It's a sad situation. It's up to you if you're listening to get them involved, because that's the only way this country has a future, okay? But it's perception, and especially when we have a managed corporatist financed media that is shilling for this oligarchic kind of control, but they don't want to do it with, you know, stormtroopers. They want you to willingly and graciously accept your servitude in pleasure. It's bread and circuses like the Roman Empire. They're entertaining you and they're feeding you.
Stormtroopers get overtime, so they don't want those. It's like, oh, God. Then dudes are calling in sick. You know, a freaking stormtrooper over here who's got the sniffles can't come in today, you know. So they'd rather just make you do it willingly and just, well, Romney's the guy and I have to go vote for him because I have to support the party. You know?
Exactly.
Now, that's what they want.
Yeah. It's bread and circuses, okay? And when this is Tex and Rex, so we're reverent, and as a great lady who listens to our show practically religiously says, Diane says that she's got to keep an eye on us because we say naughty words. Well, we do, but we also make a lot of factual historical references. You know, shit gets real on this show sometimes, okay?
Yeah.
But the fact is that bread and circuses is how the populace of Rome was managed by the emperors. You feed them by throwing them bread, so someone's got food in their belly. They're, hey, you know, you don't bite the hand that feeds you. And you entertain them. And that's what you've got here with food stamps, Social Security checks, Medicare, okay? They're providing you with your food. They're providing you with your spending money. They're providing you with your health care. They're providing entertainment.
I'm going to throw something out there, Rex, because it's been on the top of my head. It's been boiling my blood, you know, when I'm not on the radio, you know, I'm screaming in my car or whatever. But the welfare rolls have doubled under Obama, right? And if you look at that food stamp program, it's going up like nobody's business, right? So I think that's doubled or tripled almost, nearly tripled, I think, is what the actual figure is, but I'll look it up, I'll find out.
I think you're right.
Yeah, but the thing is, they've got that program out there advertising to people to get on food stamps. Otherwise, able-bodied people should all get on food stamps and get free food, and you should stay home and do what the government tells you to, and we'll tuck you in at night, we'll send you money. And by the way, if you screw with us, we'll take your money away, and we will have kept you so subservient for so long that you no longer even know how to take care of yourself. So don't,
right,
you know, mess with us, right? Well, there needs to be a constitutional amendment that says any federal assistance program, it is illegal for that federal assistance program to advertise its own existence with taxpayer money or even with outside funds, because it exists there for the people who absolutely need it, and the people who absolutely need it will find it, right? But the government shouldn't be out there trying to increase government largesse, which essentially is a grand scale of Romney's selling subs for votes thing. They're giving away food stamps for votes for Obama. And what they're doing is they're taking money out of your wallet and they're giving it to other people so that you go to work and you pay the taxes and other people sit at home on their asses and don't do anything and they receive. And you know what? It doesn't even work anymore because there's not enough money, because there's not enough people still working, because the economy's not growing, growing at 1.5%, which is completely pathetic, right? What they're doing is they're printing up the money. They don't even have the money. They just print it up. Nobody even buys the debt. They just run, hey, here's a shit billion dollars I just invented. Check me out, right? Well, what's that do to your money? Your money is still your money, right? If you have an economy of 100 people that has $10,000 in it, right, and the price of bread is $1 a loaf, and then in the same economy with the same population, you say, hey, there's not $10,000 in this economy. Now there's $50,000 in the economy. Well, what's the price of bread now? It's $5. And you know what? Your income didn't go up any, so you're broke.
Yep.
That's exactly what they're doing.
And let's be clear about something. I mean, let's understand this. This Paul Krugman-promoted new normal of mild growth, you know, even though it's a slow recovery, with high unemployment near 20%, 50% in some communities. Don't think that that's accidental, people. Okay? If they don't allow the opportunity for people to create jobs. Because let's face it, the government can create jobs, but it can only create government jobs. If you want private jobs, you have to create the environment, the same environment that Newt with Bill Clinton created in the late 90s, and we had 22 million jobs. So if you want to if you want that environment, then you need to create it. And the fact is, if they don't want it, they don't want to create it, because if you're out of work, you can't find work, and you got to feed your family, you're going to turn to unemployment, you're going to turn to food stamps. And let's be clear, for those people that are in those positions, you know, it's tough, and God bless you, and I think that government does have a role in providing these necessities, but it is limited
you
to temporary.
We even had former Speaker Dingbat out there saying that, you know, food stamps is a stimulus program. That is a stimulus program. That's how we're going to stimulate. You idiot, you have a responsibility as an elected official in the United States of America, the most powerful, consequential nation that has ever existed on this planet, in order to provide an economic environment that is conducive to business so that these people can get jobs, not handouts. You complete, miserable failure, not only as a speaker, but as a human being. Nancy Pelosi is completely defective. She needs to get out of the Congress because she's an absolute disgrace to our nation and to every American.
I can't disagree with you on that point. She's absolutely a horrible person. I pray for her soul. But the fact is that, you know, again, Nancy Pelosi did her piece, but she's just like Barack Obama and Mitt Romney. They're just part of the problem. Don't give them power so that this problem goes away. And the fact is that, you know what, as Americans, and as most of us being Christians, you have a responsibility to take care of your neighbor when he's down and out. You have a responsibility. Not someone else holding a gun to your head to make you do it. You do it out of the love in your heart. And so the simple fact is that these people are not doing it. They're manipulating your honest and true charitable sentiments in order to get you to acquiesce to the fact that they're providing these benefits not for the sake of the person receiving them, but for the sake of making that person dependent. And this is the problem, because they're trying to turn this country into a third world nation. If you look at the third world, okay, we send them a lot of money, but it doesn't seem to do a lot of good. In fact, a lot of the smart people who understand economics in those countries implore us as Americans to stop
sending
the money over there
aid. Because
we are destroying their local economies. We are not letting them become self-sufficient, and they're becoming dependent upon us. And the government here is doing the same thing to you. If you want that to stop, and before you let them divide you where you go, well, you know, 47% don't pay taxes and the rest of us are carrying those freeloaders' weight. That's not how it works, okay? We're all being pressured by this, whether you're on the receiving end or the giving end. The fact is that it's a terrible, terrible system of patronage and privilege, and it stifles innovation, and it takes away the dignity of someone who can earn and for themselves and provide for their own family. We need to have jobs created by true entrepreneurs, true business people, not people who are manipulating the government to do it. If you want that to stop, then you need to replace Barack Obama and end his reign of Marxism. You cannot do that with a corporatist Keynesian, Mitt Romney, even with a guy who you might like, for whatever reason, Paul Ryan on his ticket as vice president. It's an irrelevant point, so stop buying into that news, okay? And what you need to do is empower your delegates, to inspire them, to let them know and let everybody know that you want Romney repealed and replaced in Tampa this August, so that we can run a real American campaign against Barack Obama and defeat him in November. Get on the phone, pick up a pen, write a letter, send out tweets, hit him on Facebook, do it every day, don't stop, make it a full-time job. I don't care how hard you're working, make it a full-time job, because if we don't stop this now, we may go beyond a tipping point, and we may not recover. Now, when I say we may not recover, I still believe that America will recover. I believe our best days are ahead of us. But you might not see it, because if we go over that tipping point, it will take decades to get back. Russia was an emerging country. It was becoming a fairly respected European power. It had faithful Christian people. It was starting to move away from absolute monarchy and to have more parliamentary procedures. And they were going to come into the 20th century and really help out the people and be a contributor to the global economy. Instead, the capitalist class, the globalist capitalist, fomented a communist revolution in that country, and the people bought into it, and many of them were killed, 20 million, maybe more, okay? And it took them decades to recover from that disaster, and they couldn't even do it on their own. They needed help. Despite what you might read in today's history books, that help came from us. It came from a guy who wasn't supposed to be president. His name was Ronald Wilson Reagan. It came from a woman who wasn't supposed to be prime minister. Her name was Margaret Thatcher. And it came from a Pole who wasn't supposed to be Pope, John Paul II, blessed John Paul II. That came from here, okay, the Western world, Britain and the United States and the Christian church. But what you have now is we are that power in the world, and we're corrupting from inside. And if we get to that tipping point, it might be another 50, 60, 100, 150 years before we recover. Or you double down, you work harder than you ever have, you be louder than you ever have, you scream at everybody you can get your hands on, you pound those delegates respectfully, you empower them, you inspire them, but you don't stop hitting them with something every single day about this. Because if you do not get your delegates to have an open convention and to repeal and replace Romney this August, you are very likely to have Obama reelected in November. And that would probably be the biggest disaster that this country has ever seen. Do something about it today. Tex, do you think that I'm flying off the handle, or am I valid?
No, I don't know. All of a sudden you became rational, and so, you know, that was disappointing. I didn't like the rational part. I liked it when you were irrational and, like, yelling, shouting, you know. But I did want to say something about, you know, aid to Africa and that kind of thing. People are like, oh, my God, what are you talking about? Don't give aid to Africa. We got to help out, you know, people in Africa, right? I got African friends, all right, like real African friends from Africa, right? By the way, you know, kind of how I found the real birth certificate, you know. You know the right dudes. You can see the real thing, right? So, you know. anyway, there's that. But the thing about aid to Africa is that, let me just start with this Peace Corps thing, because this is really irritating to me. So I went to school, right? I was going to high school just like everybody else, public school, that kind of thing. And, you know, I had all these Peace Corps people. I'm like, I'm part of Amnesty International, and I want to help everybody, and all this kind of, and I'm joining the Peace Corps. And look, barf, you know. So this person with, like, a pierced nipple and, like, tattoos all over her arms and up and down her legs or whatever the heck she's going with a tramp stamp on the back there, she's going to go over to Africa, right? You know, based on her extensive knowledge, and tell these African dudes how to build a village and how to farm. Oh, okay, yeah. Like these dudes haven't been doing this thing for like 20,000 years over there. They don't know how to build a village, but, you know, I got nipple ring coming up. You know, she knows everything about how to live in Africa, you know, so this is going to be really good. You know, probably listening to a little Beyonce in the background while she's, you know, building her village. I mean, the whole premise is retarded. Anyway, some of you people don't like the word retarded, but what I'm saying is not that people who actually have the physical disability known as mental retardation, which is an actual condition, right? I'm not disrespecting them. I'm telling this person who otherwise should be intelligent that they're behaving like an idiot, all right? Anyway, everybody's too sensitive these days, okay? So here's the thing with giving aid to Africa, okay? So there's a famine in Africa, let's say, and everybody in America seems to know the case of Ethiopia because it was a very big case back in the 80s, and if you weren't born back then, well, don't worry, because we'll bother you about this for the rest of your life because it was a big deal. Okay, so there was a famine in Ethiopia, right? So you had to give aid, right? Or we, quote, had to. Here's the thing. You have people over in Africa who are farmers, and they grow grain and wheat and soy and sorghum and all this kind of stuff, right? If you don't know what sorghum is, you don't even know what you're giving over to Africa because they complain, like, dude, why are you sending us sorghum? I mean, seriously, it's like, what the hell are you doing? He's like, sorghum, that's crap, dude. Why do you send that? I'm like, I don't know, because it's crap. That's why, because we're giving you our crap. We're not going to give you our good stuff, you know. But anyway, so you have people, they farm, right? Okay, and so there's a famine. So guess what? Some of the harvest doesn't come in. Now there's not enough food to feed all the people. Uh-oh, right? But some people, they do have a harvest, and other people don't. So the people who do have the harvest, guess what? They're poor. You know, they're out on a farm, living a hardscrabble existence in a semi-arid environment, right? And so now they can charge a premium for their grain because there's excess demand for it. And what they do with the premium that they get for their grain is they buy out the guy who didn't know how to farm in the first place or who had the bad year because his farm was in a crappy place, right? They buy out that farm, and next year the good farmer is farming, and he knows what he's doing, and so there's going to be extra grain, right? And the bad farmer, or the one who happened to have bad luck, you know, sometimes it's bad luck. It's such a thing. It actually exists in the world, right? It's just like, I don't know, you just crapped out, dude. He's got to sell his farm. He's out of it. It's like, I'm done, right? You know, so that's kind of how the world works. But, oh, no, then come the liberals and the bleeding hearts and Uncle Sam, and we're going to give them free grain. So we dump a bunch of free grain on the market. So the farmer who knows how to farm, he's like, what the hell? This is like, I got grain. I want to sell. I want to make some money on this so I can buy this dude out, right? Because the other dude wants to be bought out, right? Because he doesn't have anything and he has debt. So he wants the other dude to buy his farm so he can get out, so he can pay off his debt, so he can go do something else. But now the guy who has the crop, he can't sell his grain because the United States is there showing up, giving away free grains. You know what happens to the guy who knew what he was doing when he was farming? Goes out of business. Guess what, knuckleheads? Next year, there's not as many farmers, right? So now, there's not even enough grain if the season's good because you just ran all the farmers out of business. Now they're completely dependent on sorghum and crap. And they literally said to me, sorghum is crap. Why are you giving us this crap? I don't know, dude, because we're screwing you over. He said, the best thing you could do is stop helping us because you're killing us.
Exactly.
That's what's going on in Africa. So you guys helping out Africa with your grain programs, whatever. Leave them alone. They already know what they're doing. They've lived there since time immemorial. I mean, hell, that's where we all came from. Like, these guys don't know what they're doing.
Tex, it's a good point. And I will add that it isn't just aid to Africa. It's aid within the United States. It's aid to any other country. What goes by the word aid to appeal to your sentiments is nothing more than a depression of the market, because Gresham's law, which really applies to money, but it can apply to anything else, is that bad money drives out good, and free products drive out creative products. If you've got a choice between paying for something or getting something for nothing, you're going to get something for nothing, and then eventually you're going to run out of stuff. And as Margaret Thatcher said, the problem with socialism is eventually you run out of other people's money. And so that's what they're creating here, and they're building a system of dependency. And you mentioned, and I think it was very eloquent, you said, that's how the world works. That's right, people. You can't legislate the laws of nature and the laws of economics. They are what they are. They were put here not by us. We have to conform to them. That's being a realist, not an idealist, not a rose-colored spectacles, fancy, you know, I can do whatever to peace and love with everybody. Okay, that's not the real world. The simple fact is that if you keep driving out good products and you keep taking the profit incentive away from those who produce, then you're going to have nothing left for everybody else. It is the worst thing you can do for the poor. It's the worst thing you can do for developing nations. But it is the best thing that you can do if you intend to be the oligarchic class that controls everybody's behavior and controls it not by force, but by willing acceptance. And that's what Barack Obama represents. He's just a tool that is being used to dismantle this country and the principles for which we stand. He is an infiltrator. He is an enemy of the United States sitting in our White House, and you have the power to remove him on November 6th. But the only way you can remove him on November 6th, and the only way that you can conform to these economic laws and where we can actually have the wealth that we need with which to help people, is for you to have the moral backbone to stand up when it's unpopular. Okay? When we fought a war of independence against Great Britain, that was unpopular. That wasn't what the crowd wanted. Okay, it wasn't what the people in the institutions wanted. It wasn't what most of the moneyed interests wanted, but it was done. And you are in that same revolutionary spirit. You have to stand up. You have to use the power that you have been given. You have to exercise the duty that you have, and you have to make sure that your delegates understand that you've elected them to a public position of trust. You expect them to take it seriously, and you want them to have an open convention where voices can be heard. And for all of you who don't like Newt Gingrich because you think he's a neocon or a New World Order guy, well, guess what? He'll make his case. Dr. Paul will make his case. Whoever else might be nominated from the floor, whether it's Sarah Palin or somebody else, will make their case, and the delegates will exercise their judgment. But that is never going to happen if you sail Mitt Romney in there with Paul Ryan, okay, and you end up with Rhino Man and the Boy Wonder on the ticket, because that's a losing ticket. They won't take the fight to Obama. They won't campaign well. The media will ridicule and destroy them, and you by extension. And we will end up reelecting with probably the lowest turnout election in modern history, a guy who will dismantle this country over the next 4 years, and you will never recognize it. It's that serious. This is the time to stand up. This is the time to be counted. And when you get upset because someone uses colorful language to emphasize their point, or you have concerns because text said the word retarded, let's be clear about something. Look it up. Look up the meaning of the word retard. It is not something pejorative towards people with mental disabilities. It is an actual word in English that means to depress something or prevent it from flourishing. And if you retard our economy, if you retard our principles, if you retard the American spirit, then you will bring down the whole nation. And if this nation goes, and right now we are the ones who are essentially the global empire, whether that's good or bad is a debate to have on another day, but we are. That's the reality. If you dismantle the global empire, as Spinoza said, nature abhors a vacuum. Something will come in to fill that void. That yep. Something will not be the moral nation that we are supposed to be. Are we that moral nation? Look at our history. We've tried to be. We aspire to be. We have failed probably more than we have succeeded. But there is no nation in the history of the world that has done more good, enlightened more principles, and allowed more people to practice their faith freely without coercion than the United States of America. We are a republic. We are a confederation of sovereign states. We are a nation made up of sovereign people. And if you truly want a free and virtuous society in this country and a free and virtuous society across the world, you have to make it happen. Don't count on somebody else. And yes, you don't have a vote,
Tex doesn't have a vote, and I don't have a vote in August. We have one in November. And if you want that vote in November, then you need a real candidate. And that means that you better make sure your delegate, whom you have delegated, has forces an open convention so that we can have the true voices of freedom heard.
Yeah,
it's that
Rex,
serious,
I,
that dire. Go.
I want to jump in and I want to say something about, you know, the real world and all this kind of stuff, right? And how you think you can legislate the laws of nature away, okay? This gets me back to this climate change thing. This drives me nuts, right? I'm so tired of hearing about this climate change thing. Hey, the climate changes. You know what we call that? We call it the weather. Been happening forever, right? The earth is unnaturally cool right now. You may not know that, but, you know, Antarctica, there used to be mangroves there. Mangroves only grow at a specific temperature, right? You know, why do you think the penguins go there all the time, right? You know, the salmon, they always swim up the same rivers, right? You know why? Because they were born there. Because the animals, they go back to their spawning grounds all the time. It turns out these penguins, they got, like, craptacular spawning grounds. You know why? But they're thinking, like, man, when we picked this place, this was boss, right? This was awesome. I mean, there's, like, a lake here and all this other kind of stuff. It's warm. We were doing okay. Now I'm, like, freezing. Who turned the temperature down? But they keep going back, right? And so the thing about climate change, anthropogenic climate change, are human beings changing the temperature of the planet? Well, I would submit that it's a possibility, but to what degree are we doing it? Are we causing 90% of the change in the temperature of the planet, as the liberals would have you believe? Or are we changing 0.0001%, and we don't even know because nobody can even model the oil market. Now you're going to model the temperature of the planet? On what computer are you doing this? You know, you don't even know. I mean, all this stuff, cosmic radiation, none of this stuff, they've completely figured out how the planetary temperature system actually works. And if you're going to do it, let me just make this real easy for you. No sun, no temperature, freezing cold. You just got a planet drifting out in the cosmos. What's the temperature of that ball of ice? Like nothing, you know, approaching like 5 Kelvin or something, okay? So if you want to know what the temperature on the planet is, you got to model the behavior of the sun. We don't know what's going on. Things throwing out solar flares all the time, knocking our satellites out. So how the hell are you going to know what the temperature is? You don't. Well, and you're driving around your SUV, you think you're raising the temperature of the planet. You're not. You're feeding plants because plants eat that crap up. You know. And we did these experiments with the Department of Energy in the lab. You feed plants, you just put them in a completely carbon dioxide environment, they start going like, you know, turn into monsters on you. They become huge because they start sucking up all that CO2. So if you pour a bunch of CO2 in the atmosphere, you know what the plants are going to do? They're going to start getting really big. It's already happened, you know. And the other thing is, okay, let's say that you're right and I'm wrong, you know, because we'll go live in a pretend unicorn world for a second just to make you happy, right? Okay, but you're right, I'm all wrong over here. I don't know what I'm talking about. You read a pamphlet somewhere, saw a Greenpeace ad, you know, whereas I talk to actual scientists. But, you know, anyway, I'm the idiot, right? Do you actually believe that there is a government department on this planet that if you give it enough money, it can change the temperature of the planet? Do you actually believe that's true? Because that's what you're saying, and you're making yourself look like a freaking idiot. And I pulled that punch there. I don't know why I pulled that punch, but you're making yourself look like an idiot, okay? And at some point, I have a responsibility and a duty to just laugh at you for what you think, because you're stupid, and that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
Well, I have to agree with you. The interesting thing to me is that what you were basically talking about is that we should have a government department given trillions of dollars in order to regulate the temperature of the sun. Newt was crazy because he wanted a moon colony. All right, folks, we've got a minute and a half left, so let's bring it home. And we will be back here Friday at 8 p.m. Eastern, and next Saturday as well, 1 week before the convention. Please join us on Sam Sanford's show on Blog Talk Radio. I believe he's calling it Go Brokered. You can look it up or go to his Facebook page and find it, 10 p.m. to usually around midnight or 1 o'clock every day. And Robert Jetter from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. Sunday through Thursday in this time slot. And don't be fooled by the nomination for Paul Ryan. Don't be fooled by the media. We are having an open convention. We are going to Tampa. Get out your pen and paper. Get on Facebook. Get on Twitter. Make your calls. Let your delegates know that we want Speaker Newt Gingrich as our nominee so we can decimate Barack Obama in November. This is the line. This is where we draw it, and we are not backing down. This is Tex and Rex signing off.
Rex, I'm going to hit the pool for about half an hour after this, but I'll circle back with you on Sammy's in a bit. Resolution of Tampa, everyone.